we've achieved success in our lives. And you kind of stop and say, hey, you know, what is it that I really want to do? What's my contribution? And so it's a period of soul searching.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson, an Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
Hi, it's Anne Nelson, your host for today's show. So what happens if you turn 60 and find that you're looking for a new career? Well, don't despair. It's an opportunity. Today, I'm talking with Kerry Hannon, who is a nationally recognized expert and strategist on career transitions, personal finance, and retirement. Kerry focuses on empowering yourself to do more with your career and personal finances now and for the future. Kerry is a frequent TV and radio commentator and is a much sought-after keynote speaker at conferences across the United States. So welcome to the show, Kerry.
Terrific to be here, Anne. Thanks for the invitation.
Now, you have written 12 books, I believe, and you have been writing and reporting about careers and aging for a long time. So can you give us a bit of a background about how this all started for you, Kerry?
Well, absolutely, Anne. I initially started following this whole area of careers and what we do at the second stage of our life when I was doing a column for a publication called U.S. News and World Report. And I spent 3.5 years traveling around the United States, meeting people who had done one thing for 20 or 30 years and switched to do something completely different. And from those sort of rich interviews and talking with these people, I wrote a book called What's Next? Follow Your Passion and Find Your Dream Job. And I started down this path of looking at what do we do at this second part of our life in terms of our careers, of giving back and so forth. And it's really moved on to a much broader field. And I've become a real expert in jobs for this 50 plus audience.
Wow. And do people looking for a change? Are they fed up with what they're doing or they just want to get out and take a break?
Well, you know, Anne, there's a couple of paths to starting, you know, a new direction with your working life. And, you know, the first premise is that, you know, even if you're 60, we have this longevity bonus. We're living longer, healthier lives than any generation before us. And so the point is at 60, you can have another 15 or so years where you could really move on to do something either completely different or something that's more meaningful to you. And so the important thing to think about is you can, you know, at this stage in life, it's often when I spent the time following and interviewing the people for What's Next, I found everyone did quite different things, but the common spine of it was they often made a career transition because of some sort of health crisis in their own life or losing someone they loved or an event in the world that made them say, whoa, you know, is this what it's all about? Is this what I want to be my legacy in a way? What is it that really is going to resonate with me? We've kind of gone along in our careers following this linear path, many of us. And this is sort of a time in life where maybe the kids are launched, maybe the mortgage is paid off, whatever it is, some of the big ticket items are behind us. We've achieved success in our lives. And you kind of stop and say, hey, you know, what is it that I really want to do? What's my contribution? And so it's a period of soul searching and trying to figure out what it is, where do we want to go? What do we want to contribute? And so I often encourage people, you know, this is a time of soul searching. There's no, these folks that made these kinds of career transitions, and not all of us make these kinds of big moves because we're not hardwired for that. But the point is they didn't make any rash moves. I mean, they really did their homework to find out what it is that they wanted to do and where there was a need for what they wanted to do.
Right. So that sounds to me like that's the secret of the success for those that actually spent the time looking at this and making some plans to go forward.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, here's the point. You have to like pump the brakes a little bit. Even, you know, people, I also wrote a book called Love Your Job, because it's not easy to sort of redeploy your skills and move into a new direction. So many of us, you know, you don't necessarily need to make a complete change outside of where you currently are working, but learn to fall back in love with your job again. Not, you know, take this job and shove it, but take this job and love it. And so I recommend ways that people can, you know, shift their thinking in their current job, you know, raise their hand and ask for new duties too, which a lot of us are afraid to do when we get to a certain age, because we kind of don't want the spotlight on us and we don't want to fail. We don't want to do something that's a little outside of our comfort zone. So you have to kind of push yourself and get that adrenaline from trying something new. And really, you've got to add your new skills. It's lifelong learning is non-negotiable these days if you want to stay in the work world. So, you know, those are some things that you need to do. But I think the spine, when I talked about what made people switch careers or change directions, it was certainly some sort of a crisis point in their lives that made them reevaluate. And it could be that they've lost a job. It could be they've been downsized from their employer, or they've taken an early retirement and they're like, what should I do now? But it's doing your homework. It's doing that soul searching, finding out where there is opportunity out there, and really talking, networking, using your network, talking to people who are doing those jobs. What's it really like? It sounds kind of dreamy, but, you know, is it really so fantastic? And how did they get to those jobs?
Yeah, well, that's very good logical advice there. I know that we've spent most of our life running around after other people. So when we sort of get to the 60s, we can finally do something that we want to do and enjoy doing rather than doing something that we had to do. So I suppose that's one of the reasons why people are looking for something different to do.
I think you're right, Anne. I think it is that sort of human seeking to find something to that really resonates with our own lives and our own values and that sort of thing. So I think it's an important period in our lives. And it really is a period of, you know, people use the word retirement. I don't care for that word so much. I think it's really a time of stepping forward, of moving ahead, not retiring backwards, but moving forward to do some new things, to really get excited about your time here and what you can contribute. And you know, even in terms of a lot of reasons, I encourage people to plan to continue working even after they may have retired from their primary employment, is that not only are there great financial reasons, because even if you've saved adequately for your retirement years, these longevity years are getting longer and longer. And it's important to have a safety net. You know, a lot of people I know who have saved adequately still want to keep working because they don't want to dip into those retirement plans. You know, they want to continue maybe to contribute to them, or perhaps to, you know, use this as their money that they can dip into today so that fund can keep working for them. There's lots of good reasons to keep working financially, but mentally and psychologically and health-wise, continuing to be involved, to have a network, to be in a social environment is so critical to our mental engagement. I think at this stage in life, if you step out of the workforce, there's often a loneliness. There's a sense of not belonging somewhere, not having a reason to get up in the morning. And if you can be relevant and have that mental engagement, and studies have shown repeatedly that it's the use it or lose it. If you're using your mind, you keep it sharp. And then also, just the studies show that the activity is just good for your health. I mean, we stay healthier because we're out and we're active and we're doing things.
Right. I've heard of you need to keep the brain active. I've even heard it described as giving yourself brain gym.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's a good one. It's true.
So there must be some challenges as we age about finding a job when we're older. And I've heard you talk about combating ageism. So what are we up against when we're looking for a new path at this age?
Well, Anne, you're so correct. I mean, ageism is alive and well in the workplace. And I'm not going to sugarcoat this. I spend a lot of time going around the United States, particularly speaking to audiences over 50 who want jobs and over 60 and are interested in working. And I'm not going to say it's an easy skate, but there are really specific things that I think employers have these stereotypes. And in fact, some of it may be true for individuals, but the basic stereotypes are this. One, that you're not up for the job, that you don't have the stamina actually to do a new job, to move in a new direction, to take on new duties. They worry that you are not up to speed with technology and that you're not willing to learn new ways of doing things. They're concerned that you're too expensive, that your salary demands are going to be too high, that you're, at least in the U.S., that you're expensive to insure for your health benefits and so forth. They're concerned that you would be unhappy or resentful if you took on a job that paid significantly less or less than what you made in your previous career. And they worry that, you know, finally, that you're not going to play well with the other kids. And what I mean by that is that, you know, you're not going to be comfortable working for a boss who is younger than you or a multi-generational workforce, which is what we have today. And so we all need to sort of learn to get along together. And it comes down to respect. But there are all kinds of these major stereotypes. But in fact, there are really good ways that you can circumvent that and talk about the elephant in the room, so to speak. But it's not about hiding your age, for gosh sakes. We should be proud of it. In fact, we should market our age for our experience, for our, you know, problem-solving abilities, our ability to communicate and to make things happen, to bring results and bring ballast to our workforce, because we have these years of, I've seen this, I've done this, I know where we're going with this. But there are things you absolutely need to do to make sure that you do fight back some of those stereotypes. And I'm happy to explore some of those with you.
Yeah, please do.
So one of my favorite things to talk about, Anne, is Carrie's fitness program. So here's the main thing, and this is one, the main one that applies to the ageism question, is you need to get physically fit. I have, you know, I cannot tell you how many people will come up to me and say, Carrie, you know, should I dye my hair? Should I get Botox? So on and so forth. And, you know, I'm like, hey, okay, if that will make you feel better and more confident about yourself, by all means, don't do it the day before the interview. But the important thing is, if you can get physically fit, and I don't mean running fast miles or bench pressing. What I mean is like walking. I walk my dog a couple of miles a day. But even if you exercise 20 minutes, 3 or 4 times a week, if you swim, some sort of exercise program that allows you to bring a certain level of fitness. And you know what that does for you? Fitness gives you energy. You give off this positive vibe, like this can-do spirit. Employers and potential employers don't identify that's what it is, but that is what it is. People want to be around you. So, I mean, that's a simple thing we can do. And it means eating, you know, with an eye to nutrition, all of those things. But when you bring a positive, energetic appearance, people do judge a book by its cover. So there's no denying that. You know, you really have to do what you can. And this is not hard to do. Of course, you need to dress appropriately and have an updated look about you. But again, it really comes down to having that energy level. And I think that's your number one thing you can do to fight back against ageism. The two other pieces of my, oh, wait, I'm going to stop for a second before I continue my fitness plan. In terms of fighting back ageism, you have got to be able to demonstrate to a potential employer, or even if you're switching into a new field completely, that you are willing to learn new things, that you are open to trying new ways of doing things. And how you can do this is by, you know, adding new skills, by going back, you know, start with one course. You don't need to get a master's degree, but actually, you know, so that you can show, you know, I have this certification. If you see a job you're interested in, by all means, get the qualifications for that job. You might not need every single one of them, because sometimes employers put like a wish list up there, but, you know, get some of the major ones, because the point is you're not going to learn that on the job, and you demonstrate, you know, or if you've had a gap in employment, what have you been doing? Well, I went back and I got this degree, or I took this course, I got this certification. Show that you are willing to learn. That is really, really important. And there's other ways that when you're talking about salaries and pay, which is really touchy and can be, you know, a real tricky area, you need to kind of convince an employer that, in fact, and yourself, that you're willing to work for less than you made previously. And I, particularly if you're switching fields, you should expect that you're going to earn a little less than you did before because you're a newcomer. And if you're starting your own business, you might not be able to pay yourself initially. So as you put money back into the business. So, you know, you really need to be prepared to show them that you're okay. And there are other ways, other benefits you can negotiate around the edges, because it's not just the salary. There's all other kinds of ways of compensation, from, you know, vacation time to autonomy. We all want autonomy at this stage of our lives. We want control of our time. So if you can work from home or you can telecommute, there are other ways that you can negotiate that would balance the salary dip. And then when you're ready, I'll go into my other two pieces of Carrie's fitness program.
Well, wow. I can see that you're full of energy. So you're a living example of what you preach, that's certainly for sure. So tell us more.
All right. So if you are thinking about at this stage in your life, there's two other pieces of my fitness program. Number one, we just talked about, is getting physically fit. Number two is being financially fit. And that's why when I talk to people who want to change careers or move to a second or an encore career in these bonus years after they've stepped away from their primary job, it takes a while. You know, any of the successful career changers I've interviewed, I've counseled over the years, it takes, you know, almost 3 years to make a turn. So you start and you do the building blocks. You start adding education, perhaps. You do the various things you need to prepare to make that shift. So in order to do that, one of the pieces is to be financially fit, because, you know, debt is the biggest dream killer. So if you are lean, if you can get nimble, it gives you choice about what you want to do at this stage in your life. And that takes time. So to get financially fit, I suggest, you know, let's open it up. Let's do a budget. Let's look at where you can trim back. Where can you downsize? You know, if you can pay down big credit card debts, if you have those hanging over your head, if you can, you know, refinance your home, at least here in the U.S., that's something that is an option. If you can downsize, often if the kids are launched or at this stage in life, whatever your point may be, you can downsize from your, you know, sell your home, move to a condo, move to something that's smaller. A gentleman I know who wanted, he was in the mortgage banking industry. He wanted to become a teacher, a social studies teacher in a high school here in the U.S. And he and his wife talked about it. They did a budget. They sold their home. They moved to a townhouse. They no longer have a mortgage. Yes, he makes a lot less money, but they are so happy. It's been a great move, but they took the time to downsize. So number two is Carrie's financial fitness in my fitness plan. So get yourself lean and mean. And it does take a little time. It does not happen overnight. And again, if you're starting your own business, you may need the capital to help launch you. This is a time that you need to do this. The third piece is called spiritual fitness. And I'm not talking about woo-woo religion. This isn't all about that. What this is about is this is kind of a stressful time in our lives. Regardless of what direction you're choosing to go, change is hard and it is stressful. So if you can find, is it a meditation practice or yoga, tai chi, something you can do that sort of your centering spot where you can kind of settle down and focus and get some clarity. For me, it's walking my dog along the country roads, but there are many other ways you can do this, but do yourself a favor. So the three pieces again are, you know, physical fitness, financial fitness, and spiritual fitness.
Thank you. And how do people find out more about you and about your books? What's the best way?
Oh, thank you, Anne. The best thing is to go to my website, which is carriehannon.com, kerryhannon.com. If they're on Twitter, they can follow me at Kerry Hannon. But I'd love to hear from folks. I love hearing people's career stories, their challenges, their successes. So by all means, you know, check out my website, and all my books are on there. And they're also on, you know, all booksellers around the world and Amazon and all those other good places. But my website is the best place to get started.
Thank you. Thanks very much. You're a prolific book writer. I don't know how you found the time to write all those books, but thank you very much for sharing.
Well, thank you, Anne. I so appreciate being and spending some time with you.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.